That's women.wvai.org to become a buddy in the name of your favorite program. Or call 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950, and say, yes, certainly, I want to become a WBAI buddy this Women's History Month.
Welcome to Sojourner Truth. Thank you for staying with us. This is your host, Margaret Prescott. The movement for an end to violence and criminalization against sex workers has gained momentum in the past decades. U.S. Prostitutes Collective, a sex worker rights network, has made the case since its founding four decades ago that poverty has everything to do with the existence of prostitution. In a recent event in San Francisco entitled Hookers and the House of the Lord was held in St. Francis Lutheran Church. Us Pros made the case that, quote, throughout many decades, sex workers have taken sanctuary in churches to bring to public attention the brutal impact of criminalization and to protest police illegality and racism, end of quote. Mothers, they say, were at the forefront of these struggles. Today, we bring you voices from that event. We live in a global world. We're all interrelated. So on Sojourner Truth, we work to bring directly to you news and views on local, national, and international policies and stories that affect us all. And we draw out how those of us most impacted, women, communities of color, and other communities are responding. We also discuss the interrelationship between art and politics. Now for our news headlines.
For Pacifica Radio, I'm Christina Onnestad. President Joe Biden is expected to sign a gun control executive order today that would increase the number of background checks to purchase arms. He's expected to make that announcement at a speech in Monterey Park, California, where a gunman stormed a dance hall and shot 20 people, killing 11, following a Lunar New Year celebration. The president is also expected to ask the Federal Trade Commission to issue a public report analyzing how gun manufacturers market to minors and use military images to market to the general public. John Feinblatt, president of Every Town for Gun Safety, calls the anticipated orders a home run for public safety, which would significantly expand background checks on gun sales, keep weapons out of the hands of dangerous people, and save lives, he said. The president announced plans to sell nuclear-powered submarines to Australia as part of a move to increase security and stability in the Indo-Pacific region Monday. The plan would also include cooperation to develop a new class of submarine to be built in Australia with U.S. and British technology. It comes amidst growing tensions with China over issues like the Taiwan Strait, as Christopher Martinez reports.
Biden announced the alliance's first major action.
And developing Australia's conventionally armed nuclear-powered submarine capacity.
The submarines will be Virginia-class nuclear-powered subs, but Biden emphasizes they will only carry conventional weapons, not nukes. The announcement includes more than the 3 to 5 submarines. It also includes plans to beef up U.S. ports in Australia and invest in Australian facilities to maintain the subs. There will also be joint training and submarine patrols by the three allied countries. The action comes as tensions have been increasing in the region. The Western allies are committed to freedom of the seas, and that's a touchy subject anywhere near the Taiwan Straits. Half of the world's container ship traffic passed through that seaway between Taiwan and mainland China last year. The People's Republic of China claims ownership of the strait, and it sees AUKUS as interfering in its domestic affairs. But that's not how Biden sees it.
Enhance the stability of the Indo-Pacific amid rapidly shifting global dynamics.
Rishi Sunak is the British Prime Minister.
Keeping our oceans free, open, and prosperous.
Reporting for Pacifica Radio News KPFA, I'm Christopher Martinez.
China says the plan is a path to error and danger. Environmental groups say they are gearing up a lawsuit to stop the Biden administration's approval of an $8 billion Willow oil project in Alaska. Kirsten Monsell is staff attorney with the Center for Biological Diversity.
The project will permanently scar the largest undeveloped area in the United States. It will cause oil spills that will harm a wide array of wildlife, and it will cause toxic air pollution And the project will also push species struggling to survive in a warming world even closer to the brink of extinction through oil spills and harmful noise pollution that disturb their essential behaviors like breeding, feeding, and resting, not to mention, you know, more greenhouse gas emissions that are already cooking our climate and melting their habitat.
Monsell says even the government's analysis acknowledges oil spills will occur throughout the life of the project and would further endanger polar bears, among other species. ConocoPhillips says the project could produce up to 180,000 barrels of oil a day. An unrelenting cyclone, Freddy, that's currently battering southern Africa has killed at least 56 people in Malawi and Mozambique since it struck the continent for a second time Saturday night. Authorities in both countries have confirmed. Local police said 51 people in Malawi, including 36 in the financial hub of the center of the country, have died, with several others missing or injured. Storms are hitting the east and west coasts in the U.S. Heavy snow led to hundreds of school closings. The storm's path included parts of New England, upstate New York, northeastern Pennsylvania, and New Jersey. In the west coast, an atmospheric river has flooded out communities in central California, causing evacuations, bringing record-setting snow levels to the Sierra Nevada ranges. Today is Equal Pay Day. Democrats have reintroduced legislation to close the gender pay gap. Edwin J. Vieira reports.
Pew Research Center data shows women earned 28% less than men in 2022. Washington Senator Patty Murray and Connecticut Representative Rosa DeLauro reintroduced the Paycheck Fairness Act, which would eliminate loopholes in the Equal Pay Act, help end patterns of pay discrimination, and strengthen workplace protections for women. DeLauro has introduced the bill in the House before, though she says partisanship has prevented its passage.
Year in and year out, a majority of Republicans in both the House and Senate, for some reason, they simply cannot get on board with what is common sense legislation, and it is about doing the right thing. Men and women in the same job deserve the same pay.
I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
I'm Christina Onnestad reporting for Pacifica Radio.
Those were our news headlines. And now, we bring you excerpts from Hookers in the House of the Lord, an event held in San Francisco on December 10th, 2022. It was organized by the U.S. Prostitutes Collective, Defense of Prostitute Women's Safety Project, Global Women's Strike, and Women of Color in the Global Women's Strike, an organization, by the way, that I am part of. The event marked two anniversaries, the founding of U.S. Prostitutes Collective and the historic occupation of the Church of the Holy Cross in London, England, by the English Collective of Prostitutes and their supporters. The event, December 10th, had a wide range of endorsers, including California Interfaith Power and Light, California Poor People's Campaign, Chappas Support Committee, Erotic Service Providers Legal Education and Research Project, Faithful Fools, National Lawyers Guild, San Francisco Bay Area, Rad Mission Neighbors, Raging Grannies Action League, San Francisco Living Wage Coalition, San Francisco Night Ministry, Sex Workers Advocacy Project at UC Davis, St. James Infirmary, SWAT Behind Bars, Inc., and Western Regional Advocacy Project. You will hear the voices of Pastor B. Chun, who is with the St. Francis Lutheran Church, who opens the discussion with an historical account of the church as a place of sanctuary for those who are oppressed and discriminated against. Also from Rachel West of the U.S. Prostitutes Collective. She fills us in on the victories and challenges facing the sex worker rights movement. Jane Welford of Global Women's Strike, who tells her story of being a single mother struggling to raise her children in poverty, and the interrelationship of the struggles for mothers and the criminalization of poverty. Also, you will hear from Nell Myhand from Women of Color in the Global Women's Strike. She discusses the role of racism of policing and also discrimination within the sex industry itself against Black and brown sex workers. Let us go to hear their voices now.
Welcome everyone. I am thrilled to be co-hosting this very amazing event, Hookers in the House of the Lord. It is, in fact, a Chinese last name. For many years, I was married to a man from Hong Kong, so I still like my Chinese last name. About 13 or 14 years ago, I kind of figured out where I belong in the world. So I am now married to a woman from Russia. And by now you will also have figured out that I speak with an accent. I speak with a German accent. Some people will never ever set foot in a church for good reason. The church has a terrible track record of oppression, violence, and even murder. So if people are unable to come in a church space, I really understand. If anyone here today has ever been hurt by the church, I want to tell you how very, very, very sorry I am that has happened. And if anyone here has a hard time stepping into a church and has come anyhow, thank you. Every once in a while, there is a segment of the church that manages to be to the teachings of Jesus, that manages to be on the side of liberation and freedom and justice and healing. The Holy Cross Church in London, England, represents such a segment of the church, and we will hear about that church a lot more in just a moment. I have the great good fortune to serve as the pastor of an amazing congregation. This congregation has always been on the side of those who are marginalized and ostracized. Over its 110 years of history, it has stood with the poor and the homeless and immigrants. And then during the 80s, in the AIDS crisis, it has come out in support of people with AIDS and their families. In order to serve them better, they have also decided that the best people to serve, queer people, are queer people. So they called two lesbian pastors, Ruth and Phyllis, and ordained them. And as a result, they were put on trial, then put for a while on suspension, and after 5 years, kicked out of the Lutheran Church. Well, as you can see, we are back inside the Lutheran Church after many, many years of advocacy. The Lutheran Church has actually changed its policy, and now people like me, an openly practicing lesbian, married to another openly practicing lesbian, can also be an openly practicing ordained pastor. That took a lot of work. This event respects not only the teachings of Jesus, it respects the person of Jesus. The Gospel of John begins with a very interesting introduction to who Jesus was. Genealogy. And there's a very, very long list starting with Abraham, and it is the ancestors of Joseph. So that should give you pause right there, because we say that Jesus was born of the Virgin Mary. So why is he being introduced with a list of ancestors based on the lineage of Joseph? In this lineage, there's, of course, a long, 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 long list of men, Abraham and all the other patriarchs after him. But there are four women in that list, only four. And of those four women listed, two were prostitutes. I'm not making that up. You can open your Bible and look it up for yourself. So the first woman prostitute listed there is Tamar. She worked as a prostitute, as far as we know, just once in her life in order to become pregnant. She wanted to become pregnant so that the lineage of Judah could continue. The other prostitute was Rahab, who protected two spies who came to Jericho and kept them safe and helped them to escape from their enemies. And then after, she married one of those two spies. And in this way, she also became an ancestor of Jesus. Without further ado, I want to introduce to you Rachel West from the U.S. Prostitute Collective.
Thanks very much, Pastor B. It's been a joy working with you. And today we're talking about the occupation of churches by sex workers. Historically, sex workers have taken sanctuary in churches to protest the brutal impact of criminalization. Interestingly, mothers were at the forefront of those occupations, and we're going to talk a lot about mothers today who are visible in the sex worker movement. There were occupations in San Francisco, I'll tell you a bit about that. Occupations in London, England, that's what we're focusing on today, that particular occupation. Occupations in Vancouver, Canada, and also in France. France was the first place in 1975 where women took over a church in Lyon, and it spread all over France. So there have been a number of occupations that have taken place, and today we're going to explore the one that happened in London. These actions helped start the sex worker rights movement internationally. And in the UK, women entered the church to protest after the police threatened to take away the child of a woman who was working because she had pleaded not guilty. And they were just furious. They were incensed and wanted to do something about it and show their power. Yeah, it began the new modern-day sex worker rights movement. As we see today, there's a police crackdown going on in the Mission. We'll talk more about that later. I don't know if you've heard about it. And instead of addressing the high levels of poverty that exist in San Francisco, the city, which is driving more sex workers into prostitution, there's a direct connection between poverty and prostitution, and we're all going to speak about that today because it's not spoken about enough. And the city's response to that is more arrests and more criminalization. Today, as I said, we're highlighting the occupation of the Church of the Holy Cross in London in UK in 1982, 40 years ago. And that the women went into the church for 12 days and they hung a banner outside the church saying, "Mothers need money. End police illegality and racism." A remarkable event, a reunion event, took place in London, and I went to it recently in October, where the church invited the English Collective of Prostitutes, who organized the occupation, back to the church to reflect on the significance of the occupation. And it was a wonderful event, a packed church, and people had, you know, extraordinary remembrances of that occupation. There was a huge amount of media on the issue of prostitutes going into a church in London, including international media. Sex workers got a chance to put their case, their truth, forward to the public. And, you know, the public heard about the reality of sex workers' lives in a way that had never happened before. And it broke ground in many ways. And the second film clip you'll see is interviews on a black radio show in London at that time in 1982 with black sex workers talking about their work and their lives, you know, which people, that was new, that people would even hear from black sex workers and the kind of racism they faced. And so it really, the occupation helped, you know, move the public debate forward and change, shift public opinion in relation to sex workers. And at that time, you'll see the media love to say the Vice Girls this and the Vice Girls that. But then after the occupation, they shifted that to prostitute women or sex workers. You know, so it really had an impact. And we in San Francisco at that time in 1982, that's just when the U.S. Prostitutes Collective was starting going, we did a support picket outside the British consulate for them to take up their demands.
Members of the English Collective of Prostitutes occupy the Church of the Holy Cross in the King's Cross Red Light District. They say they're tired of police harassment and they're seeking salvation from the authorities. This report from Steve Clark.
The women say they're occupying the church to bring attention to what they claim is the increasing level of police harassment of prostitutes in the area. Wearing masks to protect their identities, they went ahead with an early morning breakfast and announced their intention to stay put.
Well, a number of women came into the church after the evening service and explained to the vicar what the situation was and said that we were going to stay until we had seen the people that we were asking to see and until we had some guarantees that the situation would change.
Close to the church is Argyle Square, a favourite haunt of prostitutes. The police say they've not received any official complaint about harassment. But the vicar of Holy Cross, who lives in the square, says the girls have a right to make their protest.
Now, Salma James, you are leading this protest, and you're one of the leaders, and you're very heavily involved. Now, you're not a prostitute. How do you know?
You make it sound like that's a crime.
I'm just stating the case.
Yes.
How do you know, since you aren't a prostitute, what the prostitutes of King's Cross really want?
Because they say so all the time. They say so to everybody, and nobody listens, and that's why we took over the church. So now they are hearing, and now people who want to defend the police are attacking those of us who are not prostitutes and those of us who are for putting the case before the public.
All right, now there have been some fairly upfront attacks on you, particularly today in some of the national newspapers. And it's been pointed out that you're a long-time campaigner for women against rape, wages for housework, housewives in dialogue, black women for wages and so
black
on.
Black women?
Fine.
Sounds
but
ominous.
Yeah. Were the causes as these I'm sure may be, isn't there a danger that your reputation as a professional adopter of causes might backfire on the girls you're trying to represent and make the public lose sympathy for the girls?
I don't earn my living as a backer of causes as you earn your living by questioning people who do have causes. I earn my living as a typist, and I would like to say that every woman should be interested in the cause of prostitutes in King's Cross, and every person who understands that the police are not doing what they're supposed to be doing and are doing what they're not supposed to be doing, are doing illegal things, should be very interested, very concerned with what we are doing. We're the front line demanding that the police activity in King's Cross and elsewhere be looked into.
Some of the girls were quoted today as saying that your sit-in at the church had caused the police to crack down even harder. How do you reply to that?
I think that that's partly true. I think that many girls are not being arrested, and I think that some girls are being arrested more, especially those, you know, whom the police can get at. They're very angry when women stand up for their rights, and they're doing more illegal work in some areas now than they were before.
Well,
are you sorry?
Is the sit-in a good thing? If the police, it's causing the police to crack down harder.
No, the police are doing some more illegal work in some areas and some less illegal work in others. Women walked out of the church today and were threatened with arrest, but they were not arrested because we were with them, those of us who have been publicly identified. There is no way it is a bad thing to point to police illegality if you have a case, and we have one. You cannot say that that's unjust.
Salma James, there's one final point I'd like to put to you. The idea of campaigning for prostitutes' rights is not a new one.
Right.
In this country, a body called the Josephine Butler Society was founded in 1870 to protect prostitutes' civil rights, and today they told us that they could not support your sit-in.
Yeah.
Why do you think it is that the oldest body in the country to help prostitutes is not supporting you?
Because they're not interested in prostitutes. They're careerists who are making their living by saying they're interested and concerned and looking around and doing nothing. Women have come to them for help and they've refused.
It's a fact that there's been a dramatic rise in the number of black women on the streets. What may surprise or even offend some people is that these women regard themselves as no different from the thousands of other young black women, many of them single mothers, in our cities. In fact, they say that their demands are actually the basis of a campaign on behalf of all these women.
This man wanted a black girl, and I was the only black girl there at the time. So I went with him, and I went back to the hotel to do business.
Chantal is a single mother. She has three children. She's 21 years old, and she's been a prostitute for exactly a year. Samantha is just 20. She has a daughter of six. She's been on the game for nearly 2 years.
Chantal and Samantha are just two of the growing number of young black women who have taken to the streets to earn their living. In fact, it's said that nearly half the prostitutes that work in this area, King's Cross, are now black. And not only are their numbers growing, but these young women are very different from the traditional image of the prostitute. Many of them are well educated, most of them have children, and almost all would say that they got onto the game through their own deliberate and conscious choice, rather than being forced into prostitution through circumstances. And it's this new attitude towards their work that seems to be leading them to take the kind of political action that could have consequences, not just for prostitutes, but for young black women in general. Some of the women I spoke to were saving up for businesses that they intended to set up in a few years' time. And unlike previous generations of prostitutes, almost none of them were organized by pimps. "Why should I hand over my hard-earned cash to a man?" was a comment repeated by several. It's precisely because of their very different response to the problems of their work that this new generation of black prostitutes is beginning to make the public aware of just how different they are.
Women we talked to said that conditions were tougher if you were a black prostitute. White girls often sign up with escort agencies to avoid working on the streets. But black prostitutes claim that they are often shut out of the agencies.
You know, it's mostly English girls there, and if there's any black girls, you don't get a job. You can hang around for months and you don't get a job.
Women who occupied the church felt that they had come to the end of their tether, that nobody was paying any attention to their needs and their demands in terms of policing in the area and the way that they were being treated. So as far as they were concerned, that was the last stand that they could take to actually make sure that people started to take them seriously, take their demands seriously. And in terms of that, they've certainly achieved quite an amount. So I think it's very valid.
But even more significant in the future than who backed them are the issues on which the women campaigned. First, the right to decent accommodation. Second, the sort of work that will give them economic independence from their families, from men, and from the state. And thirdly, black prostitutes particularly want the black community's support. For activists like Wilmette Brown, however, the biggest immediate challenge may well be the reluctance of the black community itself to accept that prostitutes' demands are legitimate, either politically or morally.
What do you think the attitude of the black community will be to the fact that black prostitute women are saying that fundamentally their problems are the same as all black women's problems?
Well, the initiative that young black prostitute women have taken has already opened up a tremendous debate over the whole question of respectability in the black community, that the immorality is not with the women, but with the poverty that black people are forced to live in.
First up, I want to introduce Rachel West with U.S. Prostitute Collective, and Jane with Global Women's Strike, and Nell with Women of Color in Global Women's Strike.
So I just wanted to say, which I forgot to say, the English Collective of Prostitutes is our sister organization, and with Empower in Thailand, we together form the International Prostitutes Collective. This event today is marking our 40th anniversary of the U.S. Prostitutes Collective. We started in 1982, and we've been campaigning for the decriminalization of prostitution, for resources for women who want to get out of prostitution, and for safety and rights for sex workers. And then I have a collective statement that we've written. We're a multiracial organization, so we got input from all the different women in our organization, and this statement is by all of us. Anti-racism and anti-poverty were always central to the campaigning of us pros. Anti-racism and anti-poverty were always central to the organizing of the U.S. Prostitutes Collective. In particular, but not only, we focused on sex workers who are the most vulnerable to police harassment and violence, those who are locked out of inside jobs and forced to work on the streets. We promoted a study that said when welfare was cut, that's cash assistance to single mothers, the numbers of sex workers, the number of single mothers arrested for prostitution increased, a direct connection between poverty and sex work. In the 40 years that have gone by, we've seen change, and I wanted to talk about some of the change that we've seen and some of the crucial victories that we've won over the years, and protections that the sex worker rights movement has won. I wanted to point out this little booklet that's available at the back, and that lists and describes some of the concrete achievements that we've won over the years. And I'm just going to run through a few of them. One was as has been mentioned, the City of San Francisco's task force. The city government set up a task force, and a number of us were appointed to it, and we had the job of coming up with strategies and recommendations to the city, and it took 2 years. It was an amazing time. The city was prostitution. The issue of prostitution was spotlighted, and the whole country was watching this task force. It was the first time that sex worker groups were involved, and we came up with a really good report and recommendations to the city, some of which have been implemented. Then us pros, U.S. Prostitutes Collective, spearheaded a fight back in 2013 when we found out that when a sex worker was brutally raped and beaten, and she came to us and told us she had tried to claim compensation from the victim compensation program and was denied because they had a specific regulation that said sex workers are not eligible, we thought that was outrageous. So we started organizing to get rid of that regulation, and we found out that formerly incarcerated people, you come out of prison, you're on probation or parole, they were also excluded. So we joined together and we organized a statewide campaign. It took us a year, you know, pressing the victim compensation program. And in the end, they said, okay, we'll get rid of that regulation. So we won that. And that was an amazing victory. That was our, you know, really public fight. And it was really thrilling. We got a lot of press at that time, which was great. We also worked with other groups in the city to press the police department and the district attorney's office in San Francisco to not arrest and prosecute sex workers coming forward to report crime, violent crime against them. You'd go to the police and say, you know, I was beaten up, and they would say, well, where were you working and what were you wearing? And they were more interested in trying to establish that you were a prostitute than the violence that happened to you. And it took us years, took us 3 years. The district attorney's office came up after about 6 months and agreed to the prioritizing safety for sex workers resolution. They actually have policy now that they can't arrest you and they can't prosecute you. It took longer to get the police department to agree to that, but they did finally agree after, I think it was 3 years. We now have a safety for sex workers policy in San Francisco that also calls, you know, if the police have been perpetrators of violence, they can also be prosecuted. That was a hard one to get, but we did get them to finally agree to that. And then following those San Francisco policies, we organized with other organizations and got a state bill to prioritize safety for sex workers and for the police not to use condoms as evidence. They are now not allowed to use condoms as evidence. And statewide in California, they cannot arrest you if you go to report a violent crime. So those were, you know, took years, but it's made a difference. And we're looking now to see how they're implementing it, because it's one thing to get policy and it's another thing to make sure that the police are actually following the rules. And then this year, there was a big organizing effort to get rid of the loitering for prostitution law. Now, that law is what the police can use against anybody saying, oh, she's loitering because she looks like a sex worker. And it was used in a very discriminatory way against anybody they wanted to go and arrest. You know, you were going to the store and they said you were loitering. And the fact that we got this law abolished this year in July, the governor signed the bill. It went through the legislature, which was amazing, was the strength of the sex worker movement, but it was also the black and brown movements against police abuse that were exploding at that time and the police illegality. You know, all of that came together and the bill was passed and signed. So it's going to be going into force on January the 1st, 2023. The police cannot arrest sex workers for loitering. And they're pissed about it. We'll say something about that. We've always called out, our organization has always called out against racist policing from our beginning days. We actually started as a group of black sex workers in New York. It was called New York Pros, and then we grew into a national group in 1982, and we started in San Francisco as Us Pros. Another change that we've seen recently, and you probably know about this, is when Chesa Boudin was DA, he stopped prosecuting crimes of poverty, which prostitution is, and he wasn't arresting sex workers. But now, I don't know how many of you have heard about the mission with the new DA. She has said she is going to prosecute, and the police, the DA, and a limited number of residents in the Mission District have got together and they're calling for, you know, more police harassment, a crackdown in the Mission. Yeah, you're nodding. Exactly. And we're going to say more in the action part of this, but we've produced an action alert that he describes, like what's going on in the mission, like the police coming in with big lights, shining them on women, trying to chase women out, move them out, which pushes women into more danger because women have to go into unlit areas, you know, industrial areas that are unsafe because the police are harassing them, trying to run from the police. So that's only going to cause more violence. And I don't know how many of you saw the latest news today of this border patrol agent guilty of murder. He was convicted of killing four prostitutes. That's the most recent thing. And, you know, he thought prostitutes were trash and so dirty, is what it says in this article. And when they do these kind of crackdowns, that's the message the public's getting. Sex workers are trash. You know, that we're going to kick them out of the neighborhood and more violence happens.
What state was he in?
That was in San Antonio, Texas. Right. And so, you know, we're really horrified at the kind of language the mission police are using. For example, Tony Flores of the San Francisco Special Victims Unit, he's supposed to be concerned about victims and violence against women. He was quoted in the papers saying he's going to try and make it uncomfortable for those people to go out there. So let the games begin. They're seeing, you know, hunting down vulnerable women as a game. That's how the police are describing it in the mission. And so we're going to be, you know, doing something about that, and we're going to ask you to as well. We have an action alert that we'll talk about. I'm almost done. So today we're also marking the day to end violence against sex workers. It's a day every year. It's actually on December the 17th, but we're marking it today because we couldn't do it that day. And we want to especially highlight the work of the Black Coalition Fighting Back Serial Murders. We've been working with the Black Coalition in L.A., and they've been organizing for decades against the murder and serial murders and disappearance of over 200 black women in L.A. Not many people have heard about this, but it's a horrific crime, and they've been campaigning for justice and police accountability, because the police named those murders as NHI, no human involved. That's how they called them. NHI, no human involved. And they didn't do anything to stop the murders. And so the Black Coalition, Black community, had to get together and organize to get police accountability and you know, for something to be done. And they are now working on a permanent memorial for the victims in L.A. Nell will say more about the systemic poverty that pushes most sex workers into prostitution. And Jane's going to be talking about getting money into mothers' hands to address poverty. I mean, that's really also what we're all campaigning about. And I want to end by remembering the church occupation in San Francisco in 1917, about 200 women walked into a church in San Francisco to protest, you know, extreme repression by the police at that time. They wanted to kick them out of the Barbary Coast, and it was led by a vicar in a local church in the Tenderloin. And the women went into the church, and they went right up to the pastor was leading it and took over the pulpit.
Which church?
It's in the Tenderloin. It's not there anymore. But I
can do it again.
Is this San Francisco Rescue Mission?
It was in the Tenderloin, like down there where the Barbary Coast was. There was a church there. Yeah, it's not there anymore because we did an action and marched to the place where the church was a few years ago. We have a book in the back that describes that whole struggle in the Barbary Coast. The women went up to, there was a moral crusade against them. It was really vicious. And in the end, they did move all the women out, the moral crusade by the police and the vicar. The women went up to and said to the congregation there, "Nearly every one of these women is a mother or has someone depending on her. They are driven into the life by economic conditions. If you want to stop prostitution, stop the new girls from coming into it. You won't do any good by attacking us. Why don't you attack those conditions? I mean, that is what we're saying today. Those women were saying it back in 1917. And the conditions haven't changed that much. So, like our sisters in London, we say, mothers need money, stop the criminalization of sex work, end police brutality and illegality and racism.
We're going to take a short station break.
Birds flying high, you know how I feel. Sun in the sky, you know how I feel. Breeze drifting on by, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me, yeah. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me. Ooh, 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 ooh. And I'm feeling good. Fly out in the sun, you know what I mean, don't you know? Butterflies all having fun, you know what I mean? Sleep in peace when day is done, that's what I mean. And this old world is a new world and a bold world for me. Shine, you know how I feel. Send out the pine, you know how I feel. The freedom is mine, and I know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life.
This is Gloria Steinem.
This is Joni Mitchell.
90.7 FM.
Yeah. Yeah, 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 yeah. All right. Yeah.
This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. If you've missed any part of this hour from 10 this morning for 90 days after that, just go to kpfk.org, scroll down to archives, click on Sojourner Truth. You'll be able to hear the show in its entirety. If you're on Facebook, you can look for us and friend us there. Our handle on Instagram and Twitter at So True Radio. We're also nationwide and worldwide on SoundCloud. Look for us there. Sojourner Truth with Margaret Prescott. Today, we'd like to give a shout out to our SoundCloud listeners in the San Francisco Bay Area. And internationally, we'd like to give a shout out to our SoundCloud listeners in Australia. We now turn our attention back to the last half of our coverage of the event held at St. Francis Lutheran Church in San Francisco, California on December 10th, entitled Hookers in the House of the Lord.
Hi, I'm Jane Welford from Global Women's Strike. At this event, we're highlighting the work of mothers, and particularly mothers who are sex workers. We've joined with U.S. Prostitutes Collective in the Bay Area and Women of Color in the Global Women's Strike to hold this event. Our struggles share the common threads of organizing against poverty, violence, and the taking of our children. Selma James launched a campaign called Wages for Housework in 1972, which now coordinates Global Women's Strike. Following the founding of Wages for Housework, a number of autonomous organizations within the campaign were founded, including Wages Due Lesbians, now Queer Strike, and the English Collective of Prostitutes, the sister organization of US Pros. Together we campaign for recognition, money, and other resources for those doing caring work all over the world, giving birth to the whole human race, nursing the babies, socializing the children, shopping, cooking, cleaning, caring for the elders, carrying water, growing food. This holds the whole society together. Caring work is essential for the healthy functioning of the entire society and is valued at $1.5 trillion a year to the U.S. economy and $3.8 trillion worldwide. I lost my first child, my only daughter, to adoption in 1968. I was 19 and had no support system. I was numb at first.
Can't hear you.
I was numb at first and had suicidal ideas. I was devastated and floundering for years. 13 years later, my son was born, and that was very healing for me. I searched for years and finally found my daughter when she was 21. That was so important for both of us, and at the same time, the damage was done. I know the terrible pain of losing a child. Many sex worker mothers today are having their children taken away by child welfare because they are called unfit mothers. Homeless mothers are hiding their children in tents when social workers come around. Mothers in poverty are having their children fast-tracked into foster care and adoption because of their poverty. But mothers are fighting back in organizations like Give Us Back Our Children, which are part of our network. And as a result of the work of formerly incarcerated women and others, legislation was passed in California that says children can no longer be removed from their homes because their families are poor, that poverty is not neglect. This has established a precedent in the U.S. I raised my second child, my son, on my own. I was able to get aid to families with dependent children, which was a direct payment to me. Because of this money, I was able to leave an abusive relationship when my son was two. I was able to get a place of our own and raise my son in a peaceful way. AFDC was drastically changed by the Clintons in 1996, requiring a mother to leave her child for 30 hours a week in childcare and do low-paid jobs in order to get welfare. Thousands of mothers and their children were thrown into poverty, forcing so many into the underground economy. Many mothers, particularly black and other mothers of color, ended up in prison. We're working on getting the child tax credit reinstated and made permanent. The child tax credit, which stopped in December of last year, gave $300 per child per month up to the age of six and $250 per child up to the age of 17. This made a huge difference, lifting 50% of poor children out of poverty. This past week was a big push for the child tax credit to be reinstated. This would give mothers options. Mothers of young girls would have money to help their daughters so that their daughters wouldn't need to go out on the streets to get money for food and clothing. Even President Biden has said there should be no tax credit for corporations unless this child tax credit is reinstated. The Global Women's Strike also launched the International Care Income campaign, pushing for governments to pay those taking care of family, those growing food and caring for the land, and to protect the natural world. For the first time, mothers and other caregivers globally are being polled on what they want. This international survey is called What Mothers and Other Caregivers Want. You can find this flyer on the literature table over there too. It has a QR code that you can scan that takes you directly to the survey. We hope that you'll fill it out and take it to family and friends. The survey has participants in both the global north and south and is gathering information to help with the push for governments to pay for this caring work. We're glad to be part of this event today with sex workers. We know that when sex workers are not safe, no woman is safe. Power to the sisters from Thailand to Nigeria to India to Peru to Haiti.
I'm Nell Myhan. I use she, her, hers pronouns, and I am with Women of Color in the Global Women's Strike. And I also organize with the Poor People's Campaign, which is an endorser of this event. So we're glad to be here. I'm glad to be here wearing both those hats. I'm giving a statement for Women of Color in the Global Women's Strike, one of the organizers of the event. And we want to just start by acknowledging that the violence is disproportionate. It falls on women of color, trans women, black women, right? And so our presence here today is complex. We're here not only to celebrate the occupation in London and the work of the US pros here in San Francisco, but also to remember the violence that sex workers have faced and continue to face, and victims of that violence and the survivors of that violence. And so we just want to hold them with us in this process. California Penal Code 65322 used routinely to harass and exploit poor and disproportionately black women. It's led to the criminalization of otherwise legal activities like walking or standing in public, resulting in the harassment of black and brown LGBTQ plus communities, mostly women, for simply looking like a sex worker. Black people accounted for over 56% of loitering charges between 2017 and 2019 in Los Angeles, despite making up less than 10% of the city's population. US Pros has highlighted figures that show black people nationally make up 42% of all prostitution arrests, while being only 13.2% of the population. And racism, even within the sex industry, means women of color are all too often forced to work on the street under the most dangerous conditions. And for the women of color who are not sex workers, we are impacted by these laws as well. Whether it's entering hotels where we are often suspected of being sex workers, or in stores where we are racially profiled and followed. One case that I just want to lift up here comes from my work in Richmond. And earlier this year, a person who I'm in community with in Richmond, in the 23rd Street corridor, people, you know, may recognize that as a, it's labeled, you know, an area of prostitution and human trafficking. And so she lives there and had the, I don't even know how to describe it, but a sex worker was murdered on her lawn. The thing about it is that this woman, Sheila, 59 years old, a 59-year-old black woman, murdered. And the police told my friend, she knew better, as if it was a choice. She just felt like being out there, right? And so the work of ending violence against sex workers is really critical. It continues that we lose our sisters, and we can't continue to accept that. So working there to create a response that doesn't blame her for what she suffered and doesn't increase the risk for women on the street, which we know criminalization does, is our focus. Her life is of value. As black women, our lives have historically been devalued, from slavery to Jim Crow to today. And we are victims of racism, sexism, and economic deprivation. Similarly, indigenous women, whom we also want to lift up today as we also mourn the missing and murdered indigenous women across America, the Americas. The data in violence against sex workers means not only the increased risk of violent encounters with police and clients, it also means policy violence, from taking our children because, not because of abuse, but because we're poor, criminalized due to lack of a care income for the work that we do, caring for our families. the work of fighting for communities and fighting for justice is also work. And that work is disproportionately on people of color, black people, and people who are poor. Historically and today, as women of color, we have always created profit for those who rule over us. Yet when we demand our right to welfare and other resources that we are being denied and victimized by being called unproductive, lazy scroungers. It's important that the sex workers' contribution, which is significant to the economy of San Francisco, be recognized. And we want our money. Okay? It's like we're contributing to the economy and living in poverty. Women and children make up 73% of the poor in the U.S. Criminalization of poverty, including prostitution, is rooted in policy violence, like the obscene and growing wealth gap in the U.S. Nationally, 43% of the U.S. is living in poverty, 140 million people. And in California, 50% of the population is in poverty, 20 million people. Most sex workers are mothers struggling to support their families. How many of the 80% of women in prison who are mothers are there because they refused poverty and sold sex to feed their children? So I have just a few facts about the California economy. Fourth largest in the world, worth $3.4 trillion. And our political leaders claim that there's a $97.5 billion budget surplus. Need to be challenged, because how can you say you have a surplus in the bank and people on the street and hungry? So we know that the money is here in California. Out of the 7 richest counties in California, out of the 10 richest counties in California, 7 are in the Bay Area. San Francisco is number 4. There's no reason anybody should be homeless or hungry. Black Women for Wages for Housework, founded in the mid-1970s and today coordinates Women of Color and Global Women's Strike, wrote a document a few decades ago called Money for Prostitutes is Money for Black Women. And it spelled out the interrelationship between racism, poverty, and criminalization of sex workers. Today we're working with Us Pros as part of a movement for a care income for those who care for people and the natural world. We're bringing back the extended child tax credit, and we're working against poverty of any of us wherever we are. It's past time to end poverty in California and everywhere else, so we're gonna, you know, fight to close the wealth gap starting here.
We're out of time. Today's show produced by me, that's Margaret Prescott. I'd like to thank the Sojourner Truth team, including our board op, Gary Baca, our assistant producer, Alicia Vargas. I'd also like to thank the event organizers for allowing us to make this audio available to you. If you'd like a copy of today's show, you can contact the Pacifica Radio Archives at 1-800-735-0230 or go online to PacificaRadioArchives.org. Sojourner Truth will be back on the air. You all stay well and safe. This is your
for WPFW in Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Chris Bingert-Drowns with some brief news headlines. The Environmental Protection Agency today proposed the first ever federal limits on so-called forever chemicals in drinking water, a move the agency says will save thousands of lives. The chemicals, also known as PFAS, or polyfluorinated substances, do not degrade in the environment and are linked to a range of health problems, including low birth weight, cancers, and heart attacks. The new EPA rule limits PFAS chemicals to the lowest level tests can detect, just 4 parts per trillion. Water providers will be required to monitor for the chemicals. Before the rule is finalized, the EPA says the public will have a chance to make comments, and the agency could make changes. President Biden issued an executive order today to shore up gun control legislation passed by Congress last year. The order calls on Attorney General Merrick Garland to ensure gun dealers know they are required to perform background checks in order to keep their license. It also calls for better reporting of ballistics data from federal law enforcement to improve matching shell casings to guns. Biden will also ask the Federal Trade Commission to prepare a public report on how guns are marketed to youth. The order seeks to improve upon the Safer Communities Act, passed in a bipartisan vote last year, after mass shootings in Uvalde, Texas, and Buffalo, New York, left over 30 people dead. Biden has increasingly made gun control a focus of his public statements, and he directly called for stronger legislation during his State of the Union speech earlier this year. Rideshare companies, including Uber and Lyft, may continue treating workers as independent contractors, a California appeals court ruled yesterday, allowing the companies to